Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
Cheers, MOTAT, and thanks, Marcus, for coming in.
So I've got to ask, is this relating to plans you've got for later in the day or something?
No, actually, this is entirely unrelated to anything I'm doing in my life right now. I just want to know. I'm genuinely curious about what people think. First up in the science news, let's talk about perseverance.
So most of you probably know by now that NASA just put another quite big car on Mars. And if you haven't gone and seen the touchdown footage, there's some really amazing footage.
It's pretty spectacular.
It is, it really is. So you can actually see it coming down and you can see bits dropping off it and all the way down to the ground. It's pretty amazing, and we've never really seen that before. Mm. Of course, while it was happening, the people in the mission control were about 20 minutes behind, because that's how long the signals take to get from Earth to Mars and back again.
It's so, a long way.
So yeah, so the poor little rover was sitting there for 10 minutes or so before people started celebrating on Earth. So what's this? It sort of feels like yet another rover on Mars, but this one is the biggest and the best and the most complex and capable one ever. It's going to try and answer that question that everyone is interested in about Mars: has there been life? Is there life? Probably not, but has there been life on Mars? Yeah. And so it's gone to a place where they think it was a fossilized delta. There was running water, there was flowing water in the past. So the rocks could tell a story if you look hard enough about some life that was there probably millions, maybe billions of years ago. And this was when Mars was warmer and had a thicker atmosphere, which it has since unfortunately lost. So it's the mission for this rover is about 2 years, but it's probably going to go on longer than that. It's powered, if you remember, the early rovers had solar panels. Those solar panels occasionally got dusty, which meant they couldn't charge the rovers very well until a wind blew the dust off. This one is actually nuclear powered. Oh. So there's a little, I think, a plutonium core in there.
That's very interesting.
That provides sort of this constant trickle of electricity that just keeps the thing going. So it's more robust, but we've just taken plutonium and stuck it on Mars. So that's maybe not the best thing in the world.
Yeah, wait till the Martians get a hold of that.
Exactly. This is the ninth time that NASA has put a rover on the surface of Mars, and they've tried 10 times. So that's a pretty good success rate.
Yeah.
The Soviet Union is the only other nation to have done it, but China currently have a probe that is at Mars. It's orbiting, and it will attempt to put a rover down on the surface in a few months.
Right.
So China may be the third nation to have done that. The interesting thing about this one is Perseverance is the name of the rover, and it's going to go around, drill holes, study the rocks, but it can't do everything because it's hard to do, hard to look at really, really detailed samples in real detail from, millions of miles away. So what it could do is collaborate with a European rover that is currently under construction, I think, and the idea of that is it will go to Mars, land, pick up the rocks that Perseverance has drilled, and bring them back again. And so we can then look at them here with our big instruments that we can't put on Mars. And so it's in this place called the Jezero Crater, and some environmentalists or Mars environmentalists think it was a place that about several billion years ago it had flowing water, and hence is a possibility for life. So this is why it's really in this position. Over the next few months, the rover's going to be in a sort of a commissioning phase, making sure everything's working properly. And then after that, it's going to launch, I think this is really cool, it's going to launch a helicopter. Mm. So we're going to have a little drone flying about. It's going to come out of the rover's belly, and it's a 1.8 kilogram drone. It's really just a technology demonstration. Can you fly a rotored vehicle? But the atmosphere is so thin, gravity's less, but the atmosphere is so thin. Is this going to work properly, and are they going to be able to control
it? That's very interesting, like that. Sort of a Thunderbird style.
Exactly. Really cool.
Fun toys inside other fun toys.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So keep looking at the pictures that NASA will be posting over the next few months and years.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be some pretty spectacular pics to look out for. So next is how a magnetic field reversal could have contributed to mass extinctions.
Yeah, so this is quite interesting, and it's got a New Zealand link to it. So there's a connection here between the Earth's magnetic field. So as you probably know, the Earth's got a magnetic field. If you've used a compass, you will know which way that or where that is, or which way is north. But what has happened over millions of years is that every so often, for reasons I don't think scientists really understand, the magnetic field flips. So it's like you've got a little bar magnet and you've just flipped it upside down. And then it might flip back again a few thousand or million years later. And this has happened many, many times over Earth's history. And it's happened in fairly recent history as well. And it has caused the magnetic North Pole to move down to the South Pole and back and back again. The pole, the magnetic pole, is wandering around all the time. It doesn't stay in one position, and it sort of moves over. It might be over Alaska 1 year, and then a few decades later, it might be over Siberia or something like that.
Right.
So it is moving, but to have this major flip, you think, okay, well, I don't use a compass that often. What's the problem? I think I can find north. And so the deal is the Earth's magnetic field actually protects us from a lot of the stuff that is being pushed out of the sun. So the sun ejects a whole lot of charged particles, which would be detrimental to us and to our health and to the atmosphere and things like that if we were exposed to them. And what happens is that these interact with the magnetic field that's around us, and they get channeled into the north or the south pole. And this is why you see aurora at high latitudes or low latitudes. And this is these charged particles interacting with the atmosphere. So you think, okay, well, we want a magnetic field. And this is, coincidentally, this is why Mars doesn't really have an atmosphere, they think, because Mars's magnetic field sort of went away. And it was being slowly being blasted by these charged particles from the sun. The atmosphere was being blasted away, and eventually it just sort of evaporated away. But there's evidence now of a flip about 42,000 years ago. And the evidence comes from the New Zealand kauri tree, because this is a very ancient tree and it's been around for a very long time. And in the north of New Zealand, there's swampy areas that have preserved relics of kauri trees. So you can actually look at the tree rings and figure out, what was the environment like a little bit. Some scientists took these kauri tree, sort of preserved kauri tree samples, and looked for carbon-14, which is a radioactive form of carbon. And by analyzing the tree rings, they found out that one period in particular, about 41 to 42,000 years ago, offered up a 1,700-year long carbon-14 record. There's quite a high concentration of carbon-14, and this sort of running up to and including this period where they think there was the magnetic poles shifted, and so okay, well, what's that got to do with it? Well, this indicates that cosmic rays, in other words, these charged particles from the sun, were increasing in that time period. And this is because they interact with the upper atmosphere, they interact with molecules in the atmosphere, they produce and produce more carbon-14, which then finds its way down into the trees and it gets incorporated, and 40,000 years later we find them. What it also does is interact with molecules in the atmosphere and produces and consumes ozone. Okay, so these periods where the magnetic field was less was potentially periods where the amount of ozone in the upper atmosphere was less. And we all know what that means. It means there's a lot of greater risk of UV radiation striking people and striking whoever is on Earth and causing cancers and things like that. And this is what they think could have happened, because there are several So they think that the strength of the field shrank to about 6% of its current strength over this period. And it just happens to coincide with the extinction of a couple of pretty major species. So things like the woolly mammoth and the Diprotodon, which is a big, basically a massive Australian wombat, both seem to have died out at this time. And so they're trying to sort of connect the dots and blame the changing magnetic field for these extinctions. There's some more evidence, and there's an increasing abundance of red ochre handprints in cave paintings over this time. And they know that red ochre is thought to have been used as a sunscreen. And so more people were using this material, and it seemed to be cropping up in handprints in cave painting. So sort of little disparate bits of evidence seem to sort of come together to suggest that just this mere fact of the poles changing could have caused quite a lot of extinctions.
Wow, that's really interesting. And lastly, Planet Nine. What is it, or more fairly, what isn't it?
Well, Planet Nine used to be Pluto, and then it wasn't.
Right.
but Pluto, you know, is still out there. Pluto is part of what's called the Kuiper Belt, which is probably thousands and thousands of objects, some as big as Pluto, some bigger than Pluto, probably a lot smaller than Pluto, that are out at, you know, Pluto's distance and far beyond from the sun. And it was proposed, so Pluto stopped being a planet, it became a dwarf planet when we reassigned it, but observations in the early part of the sort of the 21st century, observations looking at other Kuiper Belt objects and seeing how they were clustered, seemed to indicate that there was something big out there. Mm. So a lot of these little objects seemed to be clustered together. And the way that would happen is if there's something big sort of pulling them together. And so the hypothesis, this is from the same guy that actually demoted Pluto, so maybe he had a vested interest. He wanted to get people back on people's good sides here. Yeah. But he proposed this quite big planet, about 10, certainly a lot bigger than Pluto, about 10 times as far as Pluto, and as this hypothetical Planet Nine or Planet X or whatever it was called at the time. Mm-hmm. And so ever since, they've been looking for it. And the thing is planets don't emit much light. They only reflect what light is striking them. So it's really, really hard to see something that's so far out that's essentially dark. Mm. So they haven't found it yet. And the sort of the wrinkle here is that other people have looked at the distribution of these Kuiper Belt objects and thought, well, hang on, are they really that clustered? Because the argument is that, well, they're clustered about where people were actually looking for them. So if you look for something somewhere and you find them, they're going to be...
Yeah.
right? So they're sort of questioning the statistical clusteriness of these Kuiper Belt objects. And so they've decided that maybe, actually, if the Kuiper Belt objects don't appear clustered, maybe the need for a Planet Nine is no longer there. And this idea is gaining... gaining traction. Mike Brown, the original guy who postulated this, disagrees. He's got data. He says he's got more data that shows it's that the clustering is there, and you really need this big planet. Maybe he's looking for a prize, or he's rested his career on this hypothesis. But it looks like maybe Planet Nine isn't actually going to be a Planet Nine.
Oh no.
Yes.
No sad. Planet X. That's no. sad. All right. Well, Namihi, thank you so much, Marcus, for joining us.
And very welcome.
Thank you to Motad as always. We'll be right back after this break.
Mind blowing. That was Dear Science. Thanks to Motad, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.